content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the New York Times. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Today's stories include New Raleigh Supply Store Wants to Make Crafting a Habit, and CDs Relegated to the Bargain Bins. And we'll begin with New Raleigh Supply Store Wants to Make Crafting a Habit. Step into most any locally owned boutique in Raleigh, and it's easy to see the city has a thriving fashion industry. From homegrown T-shirts and jeans to more jewelry and accessory lines than we can count, there's no shortage of fashion made right here in our backyard. And those makers need supplies, beads, fabric, wire, thread. That need inspired Taylor Lee and Sarah Ferguson to open Craft Habit, a new store in the Gateway Plaza on Crabtree Boulevard that caters to local designers and crafters. Taylor and I had been talking for a while about starting a crafty business venture, and when we heard that Ornamentia was closing in early 2016, we realized there would be a need for a new place for the crafters in Raleigh to meet and shop and craft, Ferguson says. We both love visiting independent craft stores when we travel, and we want the same fun and inspiring space to exist closer to home. The shop carries all types of supplies, from paper craft items to sewing patterns, embroidery thread, and patterns, and an array of beads and jewelry-making materials. More than just your run-of-the-mill craft store. Craft Habit strives to be a community space for makers to shop, gather, and learn. We want to inspire new artists by offering materials that aren't readily available in the Triangle, Ferguson says. We also want to use our store as a space to host creative meetups. We've designed our store to offer workspace and meeting space, and we welcome groups of professional and amateur crafters. Ferguson and Lee plan to hold regular classes at the shop, in addition to participating in events held elsewhere, such as their regular handicraft night out. The duo hope to tap into the existing community of designers and makers, while also attracting newbies to crafting to build an environment for creativity and camaraderie. We want people to walk in our doors and feel welcome, energized, and inspired, she says. We want strangers to start talking to each other about crafts, and we hope to spread the love of crafts while teaching craft skills. The store is at 2423 Crabtree Boulevard. For more, go to crafthabitraleigh.com. And next, CDs relegated to the bargain bins. The beleaguered compact disc, made increasingly obsolete in the age of streaming, now has found itself in the bargain bin. Richfield, Minnesota-based Best Buy, once one of the bigger music retailers with several aisles of CDs, now has a time capsule to another era jumbled up inside the $5.99 bargain bin. Lynyrd Skynyrd, The Who, Cat Stevens, Billy Ocean, Lionel Richie, all a nod to the aging demographics of those who still buy them. Does anybody remember the last time they bought a CD? Best Buy CEO Hubert Jolly asked rhetorically earlier this year in confirming the retailer is de-emphasizing the category. The truth is that CDs have been in a free fall for more than a decade. In recent years, Best Buy's collection had been reduced to a single row. Displays of iTunes gift cards can be found more easily and plentifully in its stores than CDs. Best Buy is also in the process of removing CDs altogether from its website. It only has a handful of audio systems, with a CD player left in stores as streaming takes over the music business. "I don't know if I've ever bought a CD," said high schooler Tommy Zimbinski of Prior Lake, Minnesota, who sometimes listens to his parents' collection but mostly streams music on sites such as Spotify and Pandora. He has, however, bought a handful of records. Indeed, while CDs have been on the decline, vinyl has been on the rise, prompting Best Buy to still carry LPs and Target to add them in the fall. Target, too, is cutting back on its CD selection. The Minneapolis-based retailer still sells new releases, but in October 2016, it pulled back on the number of catalog or previously released CDs it carries from about 300 to 100. Target is in the midst of an aggressive push to modernize hundreds of its stores. As stores are remodeled, the space for CDs, especially those catalog titles, will be further squeezed, said Joshua Thomas, a company spokesman. "Music is an important part of our DNA," he said. "We're making changes that reflect changes in the industry and the shift in the consumer's behavior." For example, at its Nicollet Mall store next to headquarters, which was remodeled last year, the music aisle now has only takes up half a row in addition to a standalone fixture. The selection ranges from the newest hits from the likes of Bruno Mars, alongside more classic titles from Bob Marley and Jimi Hendrix. Target also has continued to partner in recent years with A-list stars such as Justin Timberlake and Taylor Swift on selling exclusive versions of albums. But down the road, Stephen Baker, a tech analyst with the NPD Group, sees Target and other larger retailers such as Walmart following Best Buy's lead when it comes to CDs. "They have a little more space to play with, and their customer base is a little longer in the tooth in terms of adoption rates," he said. "But I think eventually, sooner rather than later, CDs will end up just in some bins for impulse purchases in those stores as well." Best Buy's customers tend to be earlier adopters of new technology, he said. Whereas in the past, browsing Best Buy's CD selection was a reason to come to the store, these days it's things that weren't around 20 years ago, like 4K TVs, connected devices, and smartphones that bring people in. At the same time, keeping the bargain bins around is a way for Best Buy to pick up some extra sales without a lot of extra effort, Baker said. "It's kind of like putting candy, gum, and Red Bull up in the front of the store," he said. "Someone might come in and go, 'Oh, that's interesting. I need a new Rolling Stone CD.'" CD sales slipped 6% last year, while revenue from vinyl was up 10%. Still, vinyl sales are only about a third of CD sales overall. While CDs seem destined to continue to decline, many of them as having more lasting power than cassettes. "They're still a billion-dollar business. That's nothing to shake a stick at," said Kara Duckworth, spokeswoman for the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. "There are still fans who love CDs and they want to continue to have that tactile experience of holding a physical product and reading through the liner notes, the cover art, and all that." CDs enjoyed a meteoric rise in the 90s, replacing cassette tapes as the popular music mode. They peaked around 2000 with about $13.2 billion in U.S. sales that year, according to the RIAA. Last year, they totaled only $1.1 billion in sales, making up 12% of the music industry's overall revenue from recorded music. In contrast, streaming services made up 65% and digital downloads 15%. Joel Anderson, 52, of Minneapolis, still buys CDs but acknowledges only his desktop computer can still play them. So he has half given in and downloads them onto his smartphone or iPod because it's easier. But there are some occasions that still bring him to the music store, such as shopping for his wife's birthday, as he did at the Electric Fetus on a recent day. He picked up a couple of CDs for her, noting that she worked at a record store in college, so still appreciates physical music. Gifting music is not as fun with a subscription, he said. And next, how companies are making customers pay for Trump's trade war. President Trump's trade war is making life uncomfortable for some large American corporations, but they found a way to reduce the pain, pass it on to the customers. The Trump administration's tariffs have pushed up the prices of steel and aluminum and have raised costs for companies that make everything from cars and tractors to dishwashers. These companies face a choice. They can bear the higher costs themselves and report weaker profits, which might crater their stocks, or they can charge more for their products, in effect making their customers bear much of the financial burden of the tariffs, at least for a while. Many companies are opting for the latter. As they report second quarter earnings, they are going out of their way to let their shareholders know that it's the customers who are paying. Caterpillar, while reporting record profits on Monday, predicted that tariffs would add as much as $200 million to its cost in the second half of this year. The company added, however, that it would try to partly offset the hit by increasing the prices of its products. Whirlpool, which uses steel and aluminum in its dishwashers and washing machines, said it had hoisted its prices this year. Coca-Cola said last year that it had increased prices in the United States, in part because of tariff-related cost increases. It's been very hard for companies to pass cost through to prices for many years, said Ed Yardini, chief investment strategist at Yardini Research. The thing about tariffs is that they make a very good excuse. Blame it on Trump. The impact of the tariffs and who bears their brunt could have big implications for the wider economy. The tariffs are raising expenses at a time when companies are paying more for other materials and labor. If most of these costs are passed on to consumers, inflation, already rising after being dormant for years, could accelerate. What is more, since the metals tariffs have been in effect only since the start of June, their full impact has not been felt. Some companies can't force higher prices on their customers because of the risk to their sales. General Motors, for instance, slashed its profit forecast last week, in part because of higher steel prices. And telling investors that customers will pay up does not mean they will believe you. Still, some economists say companies may be able to get away with charging more for a while longer. With the economy buoyant, there may be enough customers who can afford the increases. David Rosenberg, a chief economist at Gluskin Sheff, noted that a deeper dig into wage data showed strong rates of growth, and he added a recent survey showed that consumers appeared to be stepping up purchases of big-ticket items in anticipation of price increases. The Federal Reserve is raising interest rates to prevent the economy from overheating, but the tariffs, along with other pressures, could prompt the Fed to tap the brakes more firmly, which could spook the stock market. We are seeing tariffs adding to classic late-cycle inflation pressures, Mr. Rosenberg said. That may force the Fed to do more than the market has priced in. Much depends on whether President Trump follows through on his proposed trade policies. To some extent, the strength of corporate earnings has bolstered America's position in its trade fights. Profit margins for companies in the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index are at their highest in many years, in part because of Mr. Trump's tax cuts. But, Mr. Yardini noted, but the longer the trade war drags on, the harder it will be for corporate America's bottom line to hold up. Trump gave companies a record profit margin. Now he might take some of that away, Mr. Yardini said. And next, health insurers try paying for meals, rides, and home visits. That hot lunch delivered to your door? Your health insurer might pick up the tab. The cleaning crew that fixed up your apartment while you recovered from a stroke? The hospital staff helped set that up too. Healthcare is shifting in a fundamental way for millions of Americans. Some insurers are paying for rides to fitness centers and checking in with customers to help ward off loneliness. Hospital networks are hiring more workers to visit people at home and learn about their lives, not just their illnesses. The healthcare system is becoming more focused on keeping patients healthy instead of waiting to treat them once they become sick or wind up in the hospital. This isn't a new concept, but it's growing. Insurers are expanding what they pay for to confront rising costs, realizing that a person's health depends mostly on what happens outside a doctor's visit. For many people, taking care of their blood pressure or their diabetes is not particularly high on their list when they don't know where their next meal is coming from, said Dr. Lori Tischler, Vice President of Medical Affairs with the nonprofit insurer Commonwealth Care Alliance. Some of this shift is driven by how health plans pay doctors and other care providers. For decades, they've reimbursed mainly each procedure or service performed, which limits the type of help a doctor can provide. But insurers are shifting more to reimbursement that centers on the patient's health. That often involves paying providers to coordinate all the help a patient needs to improve their health and lower health care costs. You get a lot more attention to the sickest population, said Sam Ho, a chief medical officer for United Healthcare, the nation's biggest insurer. Beyond payment changes, insurers and care providers also are stretching their approach to helping patients, especially those with low incomes or chronic conditions. Verda Woodard receives weekly calls from her manager, Armando Contreras, and she gets rides to a fitness center all covered under a program called Togetherness, started last year by the insurer Anthem. The 56-year-old who has diabetes and lives with chronic pain has lost 34 pounds since joining the program. I don't cry every day like I used to because I don't want to be telling Armando that, the Long Beach, California resident said. I want to tell him I did something good. The thinking behind this program is that people who are more engaged socially will become more involved keeping up their health, Anthem spokesman Jill Becker said. Sharon Romano was feeling overwhelmed months after her stroke last year. In stepped social worker Alicia Velez. Velez from Mount Sinai Health Partners spent several hours helping Romano sort through medical bills on her first visit. She also researched companies that could clean Romano's one-bedroom Manhattan apartment and remove clutter. Then Velez started calling weekly to check in with Romano. It gave me a little bit of hope that I can get through this, Romano said. The Affordable Care Act expanded coverage to millions of people and increased recognition through the healthcare system that just giving someone coverage is not going to be enough to ultimately improve health outcomes, said Samantha Artiga, a Kaiser Family Foundation researcher. Only about 20% of the adjustable factors that determine a person's health come from care or access to it, according to a 2016 study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine. Other factors where a person lives, their income, and their diet combine to play a bigger role. Delivered meals tailored to a person's medical condition can help keep patients out of the hospital, according to David Waters, CEO of Boston-based Community Servings, which provides food to people with serious or chronic illnesses. He said patients who are sick, don't speak English, or have little money to buy fresh food often struggle to follow doctors' orders on diets. We set people up to fail, he said. 4 years ago, no insurers covered meals prepared by Community Servings. They now cover about 20%, and Waters expects that to rise to around 50% over the next several years. Commonwealth Care Alliance pays for the delivery of meals low in both potassium and salt to Sister Jean Hubert, an 88-year-old nun who must watch her diet after heart valve surgery. For a recent midday meal, that meant roast beef and rice with a side of carrots. "I think it's wonderful," Hubert said. "I never heard of that much help from an insurance company." Doctors also like the extra help. Dr. Michael Munger's practice in Overland Park, Kansas, gets additional revenue to manage care for many of his patients. That allows them to check in to see if anyone is having problems filling prescriptions or making appointments. The president of the American Academy of Family Physicians said, "It's really allowed us to expand the care team and not think just about who's next on my schedule." "The concept works," Munger said, "as long as care is coordinated and the doctor remains in charge." Healthcare researchers expect this trend to continue. The U.S. healthcare system must be redesigned to get away from the idea that more healthcare equals better health, said Sam Magnan, a senior fellow at the think tank Health Partners Institute. "We're spending all this money, but we're not getting good results," she said. And next, Raleigh family works together to donate sports gear for kids. In just 2 years, Thomas and Georgette Jung and their three children have worked together to donate more than $200,000 in sports gear and equipment to kids at home and all over the world. Here, Thomas Jung talks about why this effort is important and why he and his wife got the whole family involved, including Andrew, 13, Jocelyn, 12, and Jackson, 9. Our first question: describe the family connection that inspired your nonprofit, DonateSport.org. My mom was born in Poland in the 1940s, and her parents were killed in a farm accident. So for the first 16 years of her life, she was in an orphanage. About once a year, she would get a pair of clothes or shoes, all hand-me-downs. My mom was visiting and telling the kids that story, saying, "You guys don't know how good you have it with all these brand new Under Armour cleats." Their jaws hit the floor because they only knew her as Grandma, or Babisha in Polish. Right around that same time, we were going through Andrew's closet looking at the jerseys, and I said to my wife and mom, "We should do something and try to repurpose this gear." What has the organization been able to do? Our goal was to do one project a month the first year. We are now doing three projects a week. Our very first shipment went to the orphanage where my mom was raised. Elementary schools have contacted us one in Illinois and one in Georgia. Due to funding cuts, they don't have sports equipment or gear. We were able to repurpose soccer balls, new footballs, new basketballs. We work with the Raleigh Boys Club, and every quarter we drop off 40 or 50 brand new basketballs. I just took 12 shiny baseball helmets out there. It's great to have an impact locally and then internationally. What do you do to help children in other countries? We've been able to partner with churches going on mission trips to Kenya, Botswana, or Nicaragua. Each person takes two massive suitcases filled with the donations. It's an inexpensive way of getting things from point A to B. Andrew is the brand ambassador, Jocelyn the inventory manager, and Jackson the director of collections. Why did you and your wife decide to get the kids involved? Well, those are not just fun titles on the website. All three of the kids are very active in what we do, and many hours are involved. There's so much downtime with kids these days, especially once they're done with school and sports. We have to keep them off the TV and Xbox a little bit. How is the project funded? We're self-funded, so all the overhead is on our shoulders. 99% of the donations are given by other people, but we invested about $5,000 to get the nonprofit started. We have a 3-bay garage, and there's room for my wife's car, but the other 2 bays are completely filled with tables and cataloged by size and gender. What equipment do you need and not need, and where are your drop sites? Primarily, we need sports clothing and gear. 75% of what we collect is soccer-based jerseys, cleats, shorts, jackets, socks, shin guards. The other 25% is baseball gear, baseballs, and bats, and then we do a lot of basketballs and jerseys. Some of the sporting gear we receive we don't have use for, like golf clubs and things like that. We're reaching the poorest of the poor, and folks in Kenya and Nicaragua don't have access to a golf course. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.